welcome to Cinemarathon, the Movie Marathons podcast. We watch a series of movies in one day, and then afterwards we talk about it, discuss it to basically no end. I am John. And I should mention before we start, we're always looking for suggestions, comments about the podcast. If you have an idea of like a marathon you'd like us to do, give us an email at cinemarathon@gmail.com. Joining me this evening is a bunch of brave young men, starting with Matthew.
Oh my God. this is awful.
We have Richard.
Hey there, how you doing? And it was awful.
Yes, and a glorious return to the podcast, Pat, who you may remember from the James Bond Cinemarathon.
That's Pat McGrath, not Pat O'Reilly.
Yes.
He's also the James Bond.
Yeah, we doubled up on Pat's, but we got McGrath here. And Alexei.
Good to be back.
How's it going? Alexei, how's our website doing?
I'm actually going home tonight to make sure that it's online.
Oh, okay.
So at the time you hear this, I promise you it'll be online.
Because I've been promising our listeners each month that we'd have a lovely website.
It will be up when they listen to this. So, cinemarathonpodcast.com.
Cinemarathonpodcast.com. Excellent. Well, this month, we did it. We finally did it. We braved the Police Academy movie.
Oh, man, I'm so sorry, you guys. I've been pitching this for two damn years.
Yeah, you've been on it hard.
Oh, man. Well, I had never seen any of them, and I saw the box set in a store as, like, FYE or something, and I had a coupon for 40% off. Ultimately, I got the whole series for, like, $14.
Too much.
Too much money. That was $13 too much.
But to clarify for anyone who doesn't remember, because I'm sure you're all up on your Police Academy knowledge, but the marathon consists of it's Police Academy. Police Academy 2, their first assignment. Police Academy 3, back in training. Police Academy 4, Citizens on Patrol. Mm-hmm. Police Academy 5, assignment Miami Beach.
Yep.
Police Academy 6, City Under Siege. And then Police Academy Mission to Moscow.
No 7.
Yeah, no 7. Never. They were going for a reboot vibe.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
If it worked for Star Trek, it must have worked for... No.
Yeah. 7 Police Academy movies.
7 awful, awful, awful Police Academy movies.
All equally... Well, no, not equally awful, but all continually awful.
Yes.
I think if we rewatched the first one after watching Mission to Moscow, we would gain a new appreciation.
Hey, why don't you do that alone?
Had anyone seen these movies prior to the marathon? I know somebody had.
Yeah, yes. I had seen most of them.
Because I came into it like... I hadn't seen a single one of them. I've heard of Police Academy. I know they're not fondly remembered, but certainly talked about. I'm assuming people have like nostalgic memories of it. But for me personally, like I always assumed they were kind of bad, and you know, obviously they were.
I mean, had you seen these recently?
I actually had seen part one fairly recently, had it on as background noise while I was playing Minecraft. So I can't really say I watched it, but I remembered hearing the dialogue, and I was like, okay, I remember this, I remember that. You know, sitting down and actually focusing my attention on it was a very different experience.
But Richard, did you watch it as like a kid?
Oh yeah. I had seen at least the first four, and then as I came to see Miami Beach, I was like realizing that, oh, I've seen this as well. You know, they came out when I was like, you know, 8 years old, you know, so it's just, I was into movies then, but I didn't really focus on plot
right.
and things like that.
Well, luckily there's really not much plot to be had. I don't think you missed out on too much.
There's almost zero narrative thread in any of the 7 movies.
Yeah.
Like, almost zero.
Until the third act of each one.
Yeah, until the third
act. Right, until they're like, oh shit, we're a movie.
That's how we knew.
I guess we need a plot.
That's how we knew the movie was coming to an end. When the story came
right,
to
when
play.
Something happened.
Yeah.
All right, well, you guys want to delve in? You want to get going here?
I just want to reach back in time and ask 8-year-old Richard if he liked them for the blowjob jokes or for what reason.
I think I mostly just watched it for the goofiness. I mean, it really honestly comes down to like Michael Winslow, who's like doing sound effects, you know, and he's really, really good at him, and so it just draws you in, where there's this kooky guy who just makes sound effects, which quickly gets old over time.
You shut your mouth.
Yeah, because my only memory of him is in Spaceballs, because he has a little bit in Spaceballs, and that's like just the right amount of time.
Yeah,
for the Michael Winslow show, like it's like 5 minutes at most.
I had always hoped I was related to him, my name being like Matthew Winslow. Maybe not after Mission to Moscow. I think maybe that desire faded a bit.
Yeah. Oh, man. Yeah. I mean, before we get into each movie individually, I think I can safely say like a lot of the gags, yeah, especially like the Michael Winslow sound effects gags. I guess if you haven't seen Police Academy in a year or two and you're going in for the new one, it's like, oh, here we go. I love this gag. But yeah, like over and over in a marathon, and it gets so old.
Well, it doesn't help that they just rehash the same jokes like for him over and over again. Like the whole kung fu, like I'm talking, but I'm overdubbing myself. Like,
well, we shouldn't get too ahead of ourselves because I don't think he does the kung fu gag in the first movie.
Oh, is that that's later?
Okay. Yeah, let's preserve continuity and decency in podcast.
Don't want to give any spoilers.
Okay. Right. Well, I think it's time we start with the first movie, Police Academy.
I'm already depressed thinking about it. This whole thing is such a disaster.
Well, when we were first watching it, I thought it was horrible, but actually, in retrospect, it's clearly the best one of the series.
Sadly, I think that the first three stand alone, perhaps, and then the shit show that is the second four. I can't believe there's seven of these, and we watched them all.
Well, yeah, that's the crazy thing. I thought it was bad when we were watching it, and then as we got into the marathon, I started having like fond memories of it.
Yeah.
As being the kind of not bad one. I remember there's a lot of like gay jokes and gay humor.
It was tons of total homoerotic undertone in that whole movie.
Do you remember the shirt that what Steve Guttenberg had? What did it say? It say like bun in the oven or something?
One in the oven.
Yeah, like pointing down. Isn't like because that's what women wear when they're pregnant.
Yeah.
And he's just walking around with these like tiny tight shorts,
cut off jean shorts,
bun in the oven. Yeah.
Well, I think he was still trying to get kicked out.
Oh,
like,
I think
he was purposely like.
So that's
like
the
that.
Gag. Is like I literally thought it sincerely. Like he was just being cool. Like, that was his outfit. I don't know.
Is that your definition of cool? Just one in the oven shirt.
1984.
Well, that's why I was so confused. That's why I was like, "This is ludicrous. Like, how is this our hero?" Like, I just didn't understand.
But even when he wears that, it doesn't stop him from hitting on all the girls
who like love him.
Of course.
Which one of them's what's her name from
Kim Cattrall?
Yeah, from Sex and the City. Right?
Yeah.
In her biggest role.
I think you're forgetting Mannequin.
Yeah.
Oh, that's true.
And Big Trouble in Little China.
Oh.
And she's in a movie that's out right now where she plays an aging porn star.
Oh, Sex really? In the City 2?
No. Something like that.
Amazingly, I've actually seen Sex in the City 2. Me and Dan went in on like a joke.
Where was I?
I don't know. It was one of those spur-of-the-moment things. It was me, Dan, and Royce, who they've all been on the podcast, but we went in, and I had never seen Sex and the City, never seen the show, didn't even see the first movie.
Oh, you must have been completely lost.
I was clearly in the wrong place.
That's like the worst joke.
Terrible.
It's like not even a joke. It's just like the joke is on yourself.
Yeah. Hey, if the Police Academy marathon is any indication, like we could be cinematic masochists at times.
Yeah, that's true. That's
a lot of it's just to see, like, ooh, can you do it?
Yeah, exactly.
And that I think that was certainly this marathon. Maybe it didn't start that way, but it definitely became that way. After like a couple of movies, I think we got a lot of laughs just being like, can we do this?
Yeah.
Like,
I wanted to go home so bad after about the fifth movie.
But yeah, for like an 80s, like TNA romp, you know, like through comedy, like it's sort of like a below average. I'd give it like a C or something. You know, it has a couple moments, but man, like how quickly it devolves.
Do you remember the start of the movie? Like the titles on the building?
I was shocked by that.
Yeah.
The whole sequence.
It was like the sloppiest way to tell a story.
I remembered it started with a shot looking at our random miscellaneous city that these movies take place in, and it was obviously processed and processed badly.
Yeah, it looked like someone took a piss on the print. Exactly. Like it was awful looking.
And then the bad rain effect on top of that, and then one of the worst written pre-movie.
Yeah, eat your heart out, like
Gambit,
Star Wars.
Like opening Gambit.
Exactly.
To set up the plot, it was so... Like, I remember the first few minutes, I got so confused. Because it literally at the top just says, like, the mayor has issued a decree that anybody can be a cop.
Right. It was so arbitrary and so simple. Like, here's our one little thing we need.
Yeah.
And go to the movie.
And it took me forever to realize that each of the bumbling, like, jackasses we were watching was, like, gonna be a police... I mean, I guess that's dumb on me because the fucking movie's called Police Academy. And I should make the logical leap that they're gonna become police officers.
What?
But at the beginning of the movie, I was waiting for the plot to start. Like, I remember the first guy they show is Tackleberry.
Yeah.
Which, by the way, genius name. We finally decided it's just like Dick Balls, right?
His name is Dick Balls.
His name is Dick Balls. But his character is like a really militaristic, psychotic, kind of over-the-top gun nut.
But the first scene, he's like a security guard and he whoops a gun out on a guy and is like, freeze, motherfucker. And the guy just kind of goes like, and then like slowly walks out of the scene.
Yeah.
And me, with no context or knowledge of Police Academy or anything, like, I thought there was like a plot going on. I thought that guy was stealing something. Like, the joke was like that he's just being like an overzealous security guard.
Yeah, yeah.
But I was so confused. Like, I was just watching, like,
well, they were having a surprise going away party, and so that might have had something to do with them all slinking around sneakily.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. But it doesn't make it good.
I mean, I guess it's not that hilarious, but I just thought it was weird that the
plot. Well, I think that one's on you. I think you're not putting those two together.
Police Academy needs to hold my hand and let me know.
But see, I think what's funny about that is that sort of like set the tone for the rest of the series, and especially even in this movie, where I remember us looking at each other and just thinking, what's the joke? Like, most of the scenes were like, there's no punchline. There's just these kooky situations with no payoff, and it just made it really just like insufferable.
It felt to me like the movie was always pausing for laughter.
Yeah.
Putting a big gap at the end of the scene and then moving on to the next one, expecting that the audience is rolling in the aisles.
But we weren't at all.
Yeah, because a scene would be like someone would just fall over. But like, not even in, like, because in a real comedy scene, someone would set up a banana or something. It'd be like a payoff to a setup. But this, it would be literally like, well, let's go catch the bad guys. Whoops! And like, just, and then like hard cut out of the scene. Like, yeah. That's not a joke. Like, just have someone fall. Oh, my God.
For me, another one of the failings of the movie early on that I was completely surprised by, because I really like the Police Academy theme, although it was really worn out by the time all the movies were through. But really early on, we wound up hearing it playing in full regalia without any paring down.
Oh, man, I got so sick of that fucking theme.
Yeah.
We heard it played so early. It was before any of these main characters that we were being introduced to ever became enrolled in the Police Academy.
Yeah, yeah.
It just blew its load too early for me. And I thought, well, they could have waited at least until we see the
Academy.
It's
like they didn't even get a guy to score the movie. They were like, can you write us a Police Academy theme song, and then we'll play the fuck out of it in like every moment? Like, oh, we should mention, it's in the first movie and it appears a couple times, but there's the Blue Oyster bar joke.
Just adding to the whole like gay undertone of this movie.
Yeah. Actually, maybe we should talk about that. Just the idea that like it was like almost like a homoerotic film, really.
Yeah.
It just had that feeling.
Well, you'd have like guys in their bunk, like in their barracks or whatever, like, you know, like getting ready to go to bed. And you had that really weird shot of the captain coming in, like stroking his cane, like watching them as they're getting ready for bed, and just
polishing his knob.
Yeah, literally polishing his knob.
Yeah. Well, because there are scenes where it's intentional, where it's like, okay, they whoops a dude. There's these two guys that are like working against the Police Academy guys, and they bumble into like the Blue Oyster Bar, which is a gay club. And it's the joke is, haha, like, you know, we're not gay and we're in a gay bar. I don't know why in Police Academy that's not funny at all, but in something like, what's that scene in Wayne's World 2 where it's literally like the same joke, like they just bumble into a gay bar?
They just wind up playing along with it.
I don't know why that, because I always thought that was hilarious, but anyway, I'm getting
because
completely
off
topic.
The two guys in Police Academy who find their way, one is a very neo-Nazi looking thug, and the other one is half retarded, and it's just, they're not goofy, fun, happy people. They're two obvious bigots who end up in a gay club who, by the next cut, are having their heads stroked by large, leather-clad gay
tangoing
men
and stuff. Yeah.
And then at the end of, you know, the kind of punchline of that joke was, you know, well, what happened? It's like, no, well, there was dancing. Mostly dancing.
Yeah, like, just like subtle indication of like ass rape. Like,
right.
You know, that's the joke.
Like, right. Like, yeah, they got raped. But so there's those kind of jokes, which are clearly like, ha ha ha. But then there's weird scenes, like you mentioned, it's like Steve Guttenberg and then the other guy, like Martin. Mm-hmm. There's weird scenes where like they're literally like 2 inches from each other's faces and they're talking in bed with each other and the music's like this sultry music. And like I'm half expecting them to start having sex. Like it's. But there's no reason for it to be that way. Was that just the way the 80s were?
Like, I think a lot of it does have to do with the 80s context. Like, the whole, like, denim cut-off shorts and dudes with, like, sleeveless tees. Like, it just, like, today, by today's standards, is super good. But, like,
yeah, I guess 80s... Gutenberg, our hero, who's wearing, denim up the ass. Like, he's supposed to be cool in the movie, but he should be, like, hitting the showers.
But Gutenberg, I mean, Gutenberg was never, like, the macho man. Which I think is funny because he is, like, shirtless in this, and he's just pretty cut. Like, I never remember
Well, like, they try to play him in this whole dumbass way where, like, oh, he's a ladies' man and literally, like, he could drop a woman's panties, like, it would just say it anything, but, like, you don't buy it at
he's
all.
Gutenberg, like,
at all. Like, yeah. Because Kim Cattrall's, like, literally meets him once and can't wait to fuck him. For I don't even know why. Ugh, terrible.
I want to point out for listeners who can't see that John and Pat both have pages and pages of seven movies worth of notes that I hope to God we don't actually discuss all of them.
No,
because
no, no. We're going down
reliving
the list.
This is just
going down the list.
It's just like a in the pit of my stomach, it hurts.
Alexa, I take notes for every cinema marathon and remind me of funny things. There are actually things I've written down that I have no knowledge of what I was talking about.
Give us a couple gems from the
like
the,
okay, here we go. Here go the notes. Mustache on Chief, because there was this guy who sends Gutenberg to the police academy and he had this weird like Civil War mustache, kind of funny.
Oh yeah, yeah.
I wrote down knob polish looking on sleeping. Oh, that we talked about that.
We touched on that. I just want people to know what was going through your head as you got into this.
See, this is why notes are important, because I just came across a scene that I wouldn't have remembered. We should talk about the one joke in the movie where Steve Gutenberg and a prostitute get under
a
podium.
I planned on talking about that.
Well, I have a bad memory. That's why I take notes. But, yeah, so there's a scene where Gutenberg and this prostitute are hiding out from inspectors, and they get under a podium, and then the, like, commandant shows up. And do you guys remember what happened?
There's an inspection going on of the police academy, and one of the evildoers has brought a prostitute into the academy to get everyone in trouble. So Gutenberg, being the hero, takes the prostitute, runs off, and hides in a very small podium. And then, oddly enough, someone comes to give a speech at that very podium.
And then the prostitute's like, oh, this is what I'm here for, and then just blows the guy.
Yeah. There's a hilarious Foley zip, and then...
instead of looking down or, like, going, what the fuck? Like, the guy just gets blown with no complaint.
You just keep giving the speech. Like, that's actually pretty genius.
Of course he does it with the common
crime rate is
blowjob inflection.
But then the coup de grace, he walks away, clearly having finished, and then Gutenberg pops his head out, and, like, I guess the guy just assumes
the commandant has no knowledge that there was a prostitute. He acts through the rest of the movie with the knowledge that Steve Gutenberg sucked his dick, and it goes on.
Yeah, and he never brings it up again, really.
Well, he does. Later on, he shows up with the same prostitute with a little bit of ha-ha, I knew it. Somehow...
Yeah, he sees Gutenberg making out with a prostitute, and somehow he makes the connection, even though he would
Kim Cattrall.
Oh, Kim Cattrall.
That's the thing. He's worried he's gay the whole movie. He sees him kiss Kim Cattrall, and he's like, that's more than like it. But then it's like, well, in your mind, he still blew you. Like, this makes it all good?
Water
like,
under the bridge.
Fuck this movie and all of these movies. And Matthew, I can't believe
it. All my fault.
The guy who was afraid that he missed Sex and the City 2 is also the guy who made us watch Seven Police Academy.
Yeah, what was the objection there? Like, without me? Like, dude, you didn't want to be there.
Yeah.
Trust me.
Yeah.
Remember that really hilarious scene where with no context, the guy drives, flies out of the car, and lands in a horse's ass?
Oh my God.
Remember that? Wait,
we're not sure if it was up the horse's ass or up the vagina. Like, we're not sure.
It was ass. It had to be ass.
I would say it was probably ass.
Can't believe this is our conversation. Like,
well, see, this is the caliber of comedy that we witnessed. So, what about Callahan? We haven't mentioned Callahan.
Yeah, so Callahan's like the big-titted like helper of the commandant that helps train them.
Yeah.
And so there's a lot of really hilarious gags of like guys falling and like having their head in her crotch and stuff like.
She also starts with a sort of neo-Nazi looking cut to her jib, but that fades out as the movies roll on. I assume the size of her breasts makes her a fan favorite, and they work her into, by the end, literally the hero of the entire series.
Thank God. It was the only thing hitting me through most of those movies. She was packing some heat.
Yeah, but even that really wasn't enough.
No, it wasn't enough, but it was better than nothing.
I was too busy looking at Gutenberg's sweet ass in those, those cut off jeans. Oh, and remember the moment? There's a time in the movie where I don't even remember the context, but they're like, come on, Gutenberg, like, don't you have to sleep? And then he just goes, like, sleep is for fags.
Oh, yeah, what was that
what
about?
What the fuck is that? Like,
it's when Hightower comes in and, like, asks him, like, I need help, you know, learning how to drive.
Maybe that's to prove how not gay he is, and he gay bashes or something. Like, he shows all the signs of a closeted gay
man. Yeah, yeah.
He's gay bashing, he's wearing, like, cut-off shorts. Come on.
Yeah, it was really interesting because, like, 80s comedies, I think, just love to toy around with casual racism and, like,
yeah.
And just weird, like, just, like, sort of, like, hate speech, and which, by today's standards, would not
That's
fly
true.
At all.
Yeah, because there's always jokes about the bad cadets are, like, literally racist towards, the, like, the black characters in the
yeah.
movie.
One of them drops the J word.
Yeah, yeah. She's driving the course, and then he's like, get out of the car!
No, she runs over his foot.
Right, right.
Which is cause for him to...
Alex said, what is the J word?
Okay, I don't those know who don't just know. How racist this is, so I don't
we've
know.
Said, we already had the clerks to Randall discussion, so we've dropped some racial slurs.
He calls her a jigaboo.
Yeah, which I can't imagine.
We all agreed was kind of the cutest way of being hateful.
Well,
ever.
It is adorable racism, but that's yeah. just because I have no idea where that comes from.
Yeah, yeah, I guess that speaks to how much that kind of talk has sort of gone out of fashion. Yeah. I mean, everyone knows the N word, like
yeah,
that's
yeah.
a bad word. But like the fact that we're even like, well, how jigaboo
Can
is
I
that
say
bad?
This?
Are
yeah.
we
yeah.
offending people? Like,
it's pretty bad. It's just old fashioned.
I just noticed that they were much more free with just dropping things like that, especially in a comedic sense, than we would ever see today.
Police Academy was breaking new ground. Back in the day.
No, it was not. That's the point. It was not breaking any ground. It was retreading the same shitty, muddy ground as
yeah.
always.
But yeah, I think those are like the last two main characters that we hadn't really mentioned, like Hightower and Hooks. But I actually ended up really liking Hightower. Like, he yeah. just sort of plays this very straight...
You know why? Because he didn't talk. Hightower was the best because he didn't say shit. He didn't do dumb shit. Although he did put a fucking wig on or whatever in the third movie.
Oh, just my one, God. For one second that, of course... They,
made it to the poster.
Yeah, they yeah. put it in the credits of, like, check out the wacky hijinks in the movie you just watched. Hightower had a blonde wig.
Well... Let's close the books on Police Academy 1.
Case closed.
And that will bring us into Police Academy 2, their first assignment. And oh, what an assignment it was.
That title was always so confusing to me when I was little, because I saw many of these when I was very young, just like Richard. And knowing that there was a second movie that had the word first in it, it really just threw me for a loop. It was more than I could handle at that time.
But, I mean, it sort of makes sense if you think about it. It's like, oh, they're out of the academy, now this is their...
Not for long, John.
Even though they clearly had really an long. Assignment in the first one, which was to break up an entire riot and bring the city back.
Finally, in the second movie, and with us for a couple of movies, is Bobcat Goldthwait.
Oh, thank God.
The fucking one-man savior of the Police Academy franchise.
It's yeah. his birthday today, as a matter of
fact. Oh, it is?
Oh, let's
birthday,
celebrate.
Bobcat,
happy birthday. You kept us alive during those several hours. Because not that it was like comedic genius, but it was the only thing I was laughing at.
Who's gonna be the one that tries to do a Bobcat impression on this podcast? Somebody.
You know, I got it.
That's terrible.
Yeah.
That was awesome. No, you know what? I'm sticking by that.
It was more. You need to Louis Armstrong it up a little bit.
Oh, like it needs to be like Ferris wheel.
Oh, that was good.
Yeah, that was not bad.
That was really good. Yeah, just like dirt back, like that kind of shit.
I'm sure this is gonna be great.
Every
this
listener,
is already funnier than
every listener just
series.
Turned off their podcast. Like, but yeah, I got this feeling they did it a little bit in the second movie and in later movies where anytime it was a Bobcat scene, they clearly just like rolled them on the take
yeah.
and like the crappy scene would end and then there'd be a beat and then Bobcat would look to the camera, do something, and just go like, yeah! And just go like, yes! Like, and just do weird shit.
That's because he could deliver any terrible line and it automatically sounds great.
Yeah, yeah. It got a laugh every time. Every
it was
stupid
really
time.
Genuinely funny, and he is
yeah.
still funny.
Yeah, he's good.
I don't know. I'm gonna go on and say the record and say it is comedic genius. Because like
that's true.
For someone to take something so shit and then to almost every time just hit the mark on funny is like impressive.
Yeah, he gets the award for like polishing a turd.
Yeah,
like.
Yeah, definitely.
But he has an interesting arc. He is a villain in the second.
That's true.
Because
he's not part of the police academy yet.
No, he's literally
Zed
the evil gang leader for all of the metropolitan yeah. area.
But he's like the Joker or something? Like, yeah. He's this anarchistic, just madman? Like...
Yeah, he's the original Joker. The supermarket scene might be the highlight of everything for me. It's Zed and his gang roll into a supermarket, steal a bunch of groceries, and Zed, like, befriends the cashier girl, talks over the loudspeaker, yeah. And is just, like, kind of sweet and adorable and crazy, and then they totally. Leave, and then it's another scene.
But I love that most of the stuff they stole wasn't even, like, goods. It was, like, a rack for potato chips.
They just, they're anarchists.
Yeah, it kind of reminded me of that in the original, like, Burton Batman movie. It's, like, the Joker and crew go into the art house and just, like, fuck shit up and be zany.
Bobcat for Batman 4.
Yeah.
Dude, I'd do it. Hell yeah. It'd be awesome. Tackleberry gets, like, a girlfriend in the movie.
Yeah. Yeah, right, he does.
Yeah, and there's a scene where they're gonna have sex, and they actually, like, it's kind of funny. Like, they take off all their guns.
Yeah, they have, like, a million guns hidden on themselves.
That one definitely felt like it came out of a funnier movie, like a Naked Gun style movie.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah, because it went to full-on satire at that point.
Yeah.
Which is a tone it actually almost never reached again, to be honest. Like you said, it feels like Naked Gun in that moment, but never again does it get to that level.
I would not be the slightest bit surprised if that gag is in at least one other movie.
Probably.
Where two people take off all their guns before having sex.
Had the guys that did Police Academy, have they done anything else?
I have no idea.
Because it has this feeling of, like, they've seen funnier things and then are like, we can do this too. And, like, they're just not as funny and it's not as good.
They have. Many of those core same people were responsible for Airplane and for Hot Shots.
Hot Shots. Makes
really?
Sense.
Yeah.
What did they do for those?
Writers, mostly.
Okay.
The people who wrote the original Police Academy, at least one of them, Pat Proft, was involved with writing for Hot Shots and for the Naked Gun movies as well.
Okay.
Holy shit.
Hot Shots and the Naked Gun movies feel like there's an entire room of funny people punching them up. Police Academy feels like one funny person wrote a script that needed a ton of punching up and no one ever touched it.
Well, every step of the way feels like the first thought.
Yeah,
exactly. It's like a first draft script that never got a rewrite of one scene that was like one take.
And every time something was too difficult to shoot, they just said, fuck it, let's just cut to something else.
Yeah, because it's a weird line between something like Police Academy, which is bad.
You can see the intention in a lot of it. It just doesn't follow through.
But if you watch like a Zucker or an Abrams, like if you watch Airplane or Naked Gun, they are so fucking hilarious.
Super funny. But they have source material to directly play off of, where Police Academy is clearly a send up of cop movies, but not any specific cop movies that I know of. Whereas your Hot Shots movies are sometimes shot for shot other movies.
Yeah. But if you said some of the jokes, like, just on paper, they sort of seem similar.
What do you have on your paper?
Like, well, no, and not even paper. What I mean is something
you've got a piece of paper in front of you.
Well, what is it? To me, it's maybe not the jokes in Police Academy that are terrible, but it's just almost like the execution of it.
I agree.
Because it's like, in the end of the day, what's the difference between flying into a horse's ass and getting stuck, and then in something like Ace Ventura, When Nature Calls, like being birthed out of a rhino.
Oh, because that's maybe, like, the funniest fucking
right.
I've ever
but that,
seen.
That's what I'm saying. Like, on paper, that seems similar, but you take Jim Carrey, who's like an incredible performer, and does the scene, and it's insanely funny. Well, and they have the good sense to, like, cut to reactions and stuff.
Well,
like,
that's the problem, though, is we don't see it.
Well, because I think the big thing about, like, the Ace Ventura scene is that there's context. Like, he's in this rhino on surveillance, and then the only reason it gets too hot is because a tiny fan stops working. Like, it would be ass hot in there anyway.
The one fan in the rhino.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, so, they reverse engineer a way for it to make sense in the movie.
Yeah, to give it a comedic context. Yeah. Like, there's some guy racing through the city, and then his head is in a horse's ass all of a sudden, and we never see it, and that's it. Where's the joke? It's just something stupid.
But his head went into its ass, Matthew. That is fucking hilarious cut print.
Oh man.
Done.
We should probably move on to the next movie, which is, of course, Police Academy 3, Back in Training.
Three of seven, people. Hold on
back
to your
in
butts.
It.
Wait, was this the one with that introduced the sweet-ass chase scene that would come to define every movie?
Oh, yeah, with the jet skis
eventually,
and stuff.
Yeah. Instead of foot chases or, like, madcap, like, run-around crap from the first two movies, this one had a high production value speedboat chase that was actually pretty badass.
Yeah, it wasn't that bad.
As far as production values go, like, it was sweet. They paid stunt people for this. They paid fairly talented stunt people.
And it was extended.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Quite long.
It kind of rivaled the Bond Live and Let Die.
Or the Inception snowmobile sequence. I would put this right on Inception level.
The stunt sequence was okay. And then, so the plot of this movie was like, they... is this the one where it's competing schools?
Yeah. They come back because Lassard's in trouble. It's like, oh no, right. We gotta help that bumbling old man.
So the jackass from the last movie who was bucking for captain, somehow between movies, Mauser just becomes the head of a different school, of like the fascist police school.
Yeah,
they and wear berets.
Yeah, and then they have to. But wouldn't police have like one uniform, right? You wouldn't police your city.
I don't know. I mean, this first of all, this isn't a real city, so who knows what the fake district precinct rules are.
So the whole idea is they basically do what they kind of did in the first.
It's exactly the same
where
plot.
It's like we have new recruits, new bumbling fools, and there's then our old favorites come back to help.
Yeah,
but there's a competition basically because one of the schools will be shut down if they don't meet standards. Right.
There was an inspection in the first one, which led to the prostitute scene. So there's an inspection in the third one again, except it leads to some evildoers taking the inspectors hostage, and then the plucky cadets save the inspectors.
But at least there's a sort of a framework of kind of a plot. Like you at least get some stakes of like, well, you get the idea that there's these two schools fighting each other. So at least you get like, oh no, our precious police academy.
A little Revenge
down.
Of the Nerdsy kind
yeah,
of.
Yeah. Totally.
But at this point, Zed becomes a cop, which
is awesome.
Is amazing.
Right. Well, because they clearly make the wise decision to keep Bobcat around because he was like the only thing funny.
Yeah.
And they throw him in a police uniform.
Did they ever explain why he becomes a cop?
The whole premise is anyone can become a cop. Like, if you're willing to step up and do it, they must accept.
He reforms.
But then he starts putting his life on the line, which just seems a world away from the anarchic. Antagonist.
Matthew, if you want, we can talk about Michael Winslow's whole kung fu thing, because I think he does it in the second movie and this movie,
which
and a bunch of them after that.
The one, like, actually the thing I remember most about like his the first time we see that is that I think he's actually doing his own flips and stunts, but then like as like the first time you see it, it's actually a really great joke, like the whole like the mouth moving, but it looks like he's overdubbing
himself. It looks
like
himself. A bad dub to like kung fu movie.
That's a good like set, you know, comedic set piece for a character. And then, they just run it into the ground.
Five more times.
They don't even try.
Well, because the whole scene in this one where he does that is like he's got his kung fu trainer, who's like the whitest guy you know, like coming in to teach the cadets kung fu. And like he does it just to introduce him.
Wait, which is the one where that guy gets thrown in the back of that vegetable truck and he's like, my bro!
That's number two.
That was number two. Remember that? Like his like that
no,
like
really. Asian grocer.
Oh yeah. Right. It's like this super racist site. Yeah. Not on a broccoli. Oh god.
It's like one of the few moments.
There was actually a ton of times where there was that kind of dialogue, but like obviously the people in the scenes weren't actually talking.
Yeah.
Like it was a clear like they had a test screening and were like, oh shit, no one's laughing. Let's add in a bunch of bullshit like on ADR. Yeah. Which is it's sad because it actually did get a laugh out of us. He went, oh,
I love Asian
stereotypes. And then we just laughed because we're like, oh, he's Asian.
Well, I think we were fighting for anything at that point.
Every movie I take note of when I actually think a joke is good and it actually gets a legit laugh out of me. And every movie has usually like one. In Police Academy 3, the one joke that actually got a laugh out of me is Bobcat is rooming with, what's his name?
Sweet Chuck.
And then there's a scene where Sweet Chuck's taking a shower and for no reason, all of a sudden there's like a silhouette of like psycho knife and they're playing like knockoff, like wee, wee. And then it's just Bobcat like, what's in that moisturizer?
And then Sweet Chuck's just screaming and it's like the soap suds going down the drain.
Yeah, just suds instead of blood. Yeah.
But it's another one where like, okay, it's a parody of a movie.
Yeah,
I get the reference.
Well,
Bobcat's
feels
funny.
Like Hot Shots or...
Yeah. Oh. So this is the end of the movie, but the commandant, he wins the competition, he saves a day, and the end of the movie, the big music swells up, and he's walking off, and he's like,
"We did it!"
And then he just goes, "Yeah!" and like does like a kung fu kick in the air, and it
freeze frames
on his dumbass like kick, like. We all laughed at that just because it was something.
It was so unexpected. It wasn't a style of joke that had been in any of the movies. It was just like so
terrible.
Yeah.
There was only very little foreshadowing to that, because during the finale of this movie, during the fight, Commandant Lassard gets one karate chop in on one of the guy and just walks away proudly. I think it may be a callback to that, but I'm not
showing off his karate skills.
Just for one moment in front of the crowd, we're not sure.
I guess the Commandant, he becomes much more likable. I mean, not actually likable, but like in the plot, he's sort of likable. Yeah. It's meant to be.
Well, because you feel bad for him. Like, he's going to lose his school, and, you know, he's got a goldfish.
But he's a dumbass. Like, they do the same kind of joke with Lloyd Bridges in
Hot Shots.
Hot Shots, right? Yeah,
exactly. Same.
It's really the same. I guess
came out afterwards.
Yeah, it makes sense. You know what? You're totally right. Like, the Lloyd Bridges character is kind of just Commandant Lassard. Yeah, it's the same joke.
This was just the trial run. They worked out all the kinks in this
series. But Lloyd Bridges in the Hot Shots movies is, like, fucking hilarious.
Yeah, this is Lloyd Bridges.
Yeah, and Commandant Lassard is just like, oh, my fish.
This is Hot Shots Part Z.
Exactly. Yep.
So, the next movie, Police Academy 4, Citizens on Patrol.
Which stands for cops.
Citizens on Patrol! Citizens on Patrol! Citizens on Patrol!
That's funny.
Oh, my God.
Cops are called cops.
It had a great theme song at the beginning.
Oh, yeah. This is the one with the rap song, right? Yeah.
Citizens on Patrol.
Citizens.
Oh, okay.
Which I think
that's the only part I know.
I think Michael Winslow sings that song, right?
Yeah, I think so.
Did he have, like, a band, or they just got him on the mic for that one?
Yeah, like, I think that, like in much like what Reggie Watts kind of style, you know, make up a song, do the sound effects, get the beat going yourself. Just do it all.
Yeah, it was like a one-man show there.
What are you
John's notes have dwindled from about 20 points for movie 1 to 5 points in movie 4.
Well,
one
I noticed there's
incredible.
One big point. It's just all caps says, ugh, like, because that's how I felt at the time.
So once again, Lassard is in trouble.
Yes.
And they need the help of, you know, the plucky...
they need David Spade on the case.
Exactly.
So what is the genesis of the idea of recruiting citizens? Is it that liberal poor mayor's idea again or something?
No, it's Lassard's idea.
Yeah, it was
well,
Lassard.
What's completely insane is if the premise in the movie is anyone who wants to be a police officer can become a police officer, then why, if citizens are willing to not only... help out, but like have their own uniforms and spend all day policing the street. Like,
well,
just
if they're
become
old
police
people
officers.
And children, I think they're too young and too old. Like, literally,
but
I
the
don't
whole
know.
Point is, there's all anyone can be taken,
and it's voluntary as well. It wouldn't be an occupation; it's more of a neighborhood watch.
I see. It's like a part time,
like volunteer fire department.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Is this the one where Bobcat had the girlfriend? That that chick who was she's like Veronica Mars's mom in Veronica Mars. That's the only thing.
She's super cute.
From.
Yeah, she's adorable.
And clearly picks like the best of the bunch.
I agree with that.
If you're gonna go for anybody, Bobcat should be a guy. Yeah, all the funniest stuff in the movie.
Yeah, they have that scene in the park where like they're standing right next to each other, and then all of a sudden they're like 80 feet away.
Oh no,
like,
they're running in slow mo, and it's cutting back and forth as if they're about
they do
to
that
hug
love
and...
story like. Nah, nah.
And then they're a mile apart.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, no, I mentioned a little bit earlier, but David Spade's in the movie.
And Tony Hawk.
There's all these skateboarders.
Mm-hmm. Dude, it's the 80s. Totally tubular and rad.
They're wearing like neon pink and neon green shirts. You know, it's just like very 80s.
So yeah, they're almost like punished for skateboarding around, and they have to join Citizens on Patrol.
Yeah.
Much like Gutenberg in Part 1.
Oh, man, it's so cyclical.
It's a passing of the torch.
Exactly. I was, in fact, very aggravated that there wasn't even one mention of Mahoney saying, hey these kids are in trouble. Give them a chance for them to help the police just like myself.
I got this distinct impression that Mahoney like never gave a fuck about anything. like that guy, every scene was just like, hey, what's up, I'm Mahoney. Hey, you're a pretty girl.
He's in the movie less and less.
Yeah, totally.
Go on.
By the third and fourth movie, he literally shows up, hey, it's me, Mahoney, and like has two scenes.
Yeah, it feels like his agent accidentally signed a contract that said he had to appear in 4 movies.
In perpetuity for all time. Because
he checks out after the fourth one, right?
But then he checks out to go do that Village People movie.
Hey.
Where
Short like, Circuit? When was that?
Oh, I don't know. You know, he's like, Steve, the intro to the Village People movie... is Steve Gutenberg in denim cutoff?
Holy
booty
shit!
Shorts.
I smell another awful Matthew Winslow chosen film.
Yeah. But it's Steve Gutenberg like skating around New York City in like booty cut denim shorts, like dancing to
really?
Village People.
I have not seen this movie.
I will show you the intro. It's amazing. I can't remember the title of it right now. But
well,
it's just,
I think the mystery solved at that point, right?
Like he pretty much left Police Academy and then did that. So it's like another just like stupid ass 80s movie.
Well, he did Three Men and a Baby.
Never heard of it.
Now this is where they finally go back to the bad guy from the first movie, right?
Yes. Yeah, Harris is
back. The knob polishing dude. So, yeah, so he's back in charge. And then there's, I remember this scene where I think it's him or somebody else. Like, there's, it's literally the joke is like they walk out the wrong door and into a shower.
And he comes out wet.
Yeah, and he comes out like, wah, wah. Like, I walked in the shower. But I kept thinking, like, what fucking idiot just walks? he can see right in front of him that it's a fucking shower.
And it's not like the shower head is right on the other side of the door.
Yeah. And there's steam coming out of the room and everything. Like, yes, we can't see it's a shower until the camera tilts up and shows shower. But, like, he would never walk in the room.
That, what do you mean? That's never happened to you? I'm the only guy that's accidentally walked into a shower.
That's the laziest, stupidest joke, like, I've ever seen. So the guys, like, haze the new kids. And it leads in this stupid bit where Hightower has
no,
on, like,
that's
a,
funny. It's funny.
Well, no, I mean, fine. What? I affectionately say stupid
okay, there you go.
To this.
So, they load these kids up into a paddy wagon, and they take them to some random-ass, like, tenement house in the ghetto and park them in an alley. And then they're like, hold on, here in the car, we gotta go inside and get something. And then when they come out, they're accompanied by a giant Rastafarian named
Badula,
right? Which is just Hightower, the character
in a
like
Rasta
him.
Wig, yeah. And
but
and
he keeps chanting
hat.
And
I
doing
yama 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 yama.
Yeah. So that is
he's
the
also
kid.
Carrying a corpse in a bag with
yes,
him. Right. Which he brings into the back of the truck with him.
So he gets in the back of the truck with the kids and a corpse, a body bag, and he just sits down. And he has like some object in his hand that he keeps slapping. It's like some reeds or something.
Yeah, yeah.
And he just stares at them and keeps going, yumma, 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 yum. And you can see the kids like slowly shitting their pants.
Right.
Because Hightower is enormous. But I don't even remember where it goes from there.
Well, there's a person in the body bag.
Oh, he wakes
has a
up.
Chainsaw.
Yeah, oh, shit.
It's Tackle Bear.
It's Tackle Bear with a hockey mask. No,
yeah.
So,
it's like
okay,
a pop
so all of a sudden you hear
out.
The rev of a chainsaw
yeah.
and cuts through
and
the body
scream.
Bag.
So, but I think it works because Hightower up until this point has been very straightforward.
Yeah, it's
never
funnier
done
to us
goofy.
Than it could be to the kids because we have this Hightower affection built in because he's the
and,
tall, quiet guy.
And I
yeah.
think it also helps that Hightower is a terrible actor. So yeah. like the fact that you put him
yumma,
into a
yumma,
context
yumma, yumma,
where
yumma.
He has to like pretend to be another culture,
it's clearly just Hightower
yeah.
with like a Rasta hat
like,
on.
Like, how would you not know that's him?
Yeah, like. How do they pull that prank off? Because if we take, like, Richard and throw a mustache on him and put him in a car, like, we would all know it was him.
Oh, my God, Richard, where did you go? You have
like,
a mustache.
Why do people get fooled like that in movies? Like, it's clearly
it's like the classic
guy.
Superman. It's like yeah. you take off your glasses.
Well, in David Spade's defense, he's a dumbass in this movie.
Yeah. That's true. Did anyone have anything else about Citizens on Patrol?
Sharon Stone.
Oh, yes. Good point. Yeah, we should talk about that. Yeah, Sharon Stone was the love interest. The reporter / dog
yeah.
adopter. Like,
you, it's like, you can't keep this cop dog at the police place.
So, we should... we should keep it going.
Now, this is good because I feel like the listeners are going to get the same sentiment that we had while watching the marathon. Just the pain.
Yeah,
the
if
pain
anything, this
it.
Will serve as a public service announcement to listen to this and know to not watch all these movies.
I should also point out that through the first four awful, awful movies, for some reason I was convinced that when they get to Miami...
Yeah, you were...
Shit gets really funny because this was, again, misplaced nostalgia. Yeah. I had seen these movies so many times. And something about the Miami one just
yeah.
seemed
so
funny
yeah, the
to
next
me.
One is Police Academy 5.
It's not funny.
Assignment Miami Beach.
It's worse. They're progressively worse.
Alexei, so what made this one so much funnier?
I don't know.
Others?
Girls in bikinis, probably.
Yeah, maybe.
This is probably like me reaching way back.
Is this the one
back.
You'd seen the most as like a kid?
I don't know. So growing up, I did not rent these movies. I never had HBO or anything. I only saw these on like Saturday afternoon, like WB crap movies between edited down Terminator or Total Recall.
Right.
And
but apparently that gave you enough knowledge to constantly proclaim in the marathon.
I swear
like,
this is the best one.
Yeah.
I still think so.
Guys,
I know it's
just hold
true.
Out because Police Academy 5, that's going to bring it all together.
Wait, No.
Five. No, five.
I was sure that when they got to Miami.
To me, to proclaim that in the first movie without Bobcat, he's gone now.
I feel like something changes with the production. Like, it stops feeling like the eight. Like, I don't know the year on this, but it stops feeling like one generation of movies. And starts feeling like a modern movie somehow.
Well, it's the first movie they get out of the
city. Maybe that's it.
Because it's
location.
Like, yeah,
they
stopped
filming in Canada.
Because the first four movies are all the same shit. It's the same
it's
town,
like a gray
same
set,
thing.
And it's all terrible.
Yeah. So it's a logical choice to be like, oh, let's go to the fucking beach and have a big old beach blanket bingo party. Like,
what?
Then it'll be hilarious.
You never heard of that, Richard?
You never seen beach blanket bingo? With what's her name?
Annette and Frankie Avalos.
I have not seen this.
You know, actually, that would make a very interesting Cinemarathon. All the beach party.
Yeah,
movies?
The beach party.
Because there's like muscle
a little
beach
too
party.
Conceptual.
No, they're not. They're literally it's same characters.
Yeah,
it's a smoothie series.
Basically, what I'm trying to say is I'm not gonna let you and Matthew railroad me into another marathon like this.
Let me put a little point in here. I had never
hey, you didn't
seen...
have to come.
Yeah. The next marathon, somebody better die in one of these movies.
I'm just saying, I never saw the Police Academy movies. That's why I pitched this. I've seen the Beach Party movies. That's some
I don't care. I don't trust you anymore.
Yeah, they're not bad at all.
You're both dead to me,
trust
is what I'm
me.
Trying to say.
I went into this and I've never
there's
seen
this
it.
Amazing running joke in the Beach Party movies where every movie has a different horror person.
Yeah.
Who every movie we'll talk about, like, oh, Mr. Big, the mysterious guy. And then, like, Vincent Price will turn around in the last scene and be like, hey, what's up? I'm Vincent Price. And, like, there's all these weird cameos.
I think it's
awesome.
Wait, so are we, John and I, the only people that know about the Beach Party movies?
I know about them. I haven't seen a one, but I've heard of them. Yeah.
I've never.
That's really interesting because those are like pretty huge. That's a huge franchise.
Totally.
Like from like,
yeah, I wouldn't. Maybe not as our next marathon, but I'm keeping that one in the back pocket.
Yeah, maybe like a couple months down the line.
Yeah, that'd
be
a nice change of pace. Like, trust me,
listeners, please, listeners, submit your ideas now. Some sweet ass marathon ideas.
What do you
please
have against
now.
The Beach Party movies? That's like, why
you
are
probably
you
don't even know what it is.
I'm familiar. I have not sat down and watched all of them, but I am familiar, and I don't want to watch that crap, man.
Let's do this later. We got some more Police Academy.
Yeah, we really need to get back on point with good old Assignment Miami Beach.
Now starring Matt McCoy.
Yeah, this jackass takes over the lead role. I guess not really lead role, because he's in it about as much as Gutenberg is in the other ones.
Less, in fact.
But he's just the new leading
he's
man.
He's a good-looking guy.
But he's not that good-looking.
No, he's awful.
He's kind of like, looks like shit. I mean, Gutenberg's not that good-looking a guy. I mean, he's like okay-looking, but he looks like James fucking Bond. On compared to this guy, like
I think
like,
this guy's a TV actor, isn't he?
Yes.
Well, I recognized him from LA Confidential as the he's on the fake TV show they have on there.
He has a bit of a period look about him.
Yeah,
but he's supposed to be Lessard's nephew, right?
That's
yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So the deal is Lessard's getting a medal or commendation for being the police officer of the decade.
Yeah.
And right. they're holding it in Miami. I don't know how the fuck this guy
after all the bumbling bullshit he's been through.
And he's forced into retirement no less.
And then they do like a what's up doc like bag switcheroo.
Yes.
Like oh whoops.
Some diamond thieves accidentally switch their bag of diamonds for Lessard's bag with a goldfish in a jar that's magically
goes through the x-ray machines like on its side.
So as we mentioned, each movie actually has a joke that makes us laugh. And as
the
much
best
as
joke of the whole
yeah,
series,
as much as we hate Police Academy and especially Assignment Miami Beach, there is one joke that got a huge laugh out of us. And it's on the beach. It's like a Jaws parody where like a shark's about to attack and oh my God, everybody's running. And then it cuts to Tackleberry just pulls out a Magnum and points it at this bullshit like fake shark.
Yeah, like clearly like a dummy puppet
yeah,
shark.
And this puppet's mouth is like open wide like, oh! And then it just doubles back and like swims away and he just like a badass.
But it swims away sped up. Like they speed up the footage like Benny Hill or
something. I mean, but the real comedy was just the expression on that dumb shark's face. Right. Like he went like the sharks could make that face like a dough.
Yeah, like a, you got me.
You got me. Like see, that's a fucking joke.
Yeah,
that's
that
hot.
Was really funny.
That's some right.
But
right
that's
there.
One that was clearly accidentally hilarious. Like that was the best prop shark they could get, which speaks
right.
volumes.
It's almost
about
the comedy
this
was
production.
How bad the shark was.
Yeah. Like, but they knew it was funny. It was a joke. The man points a gun at a shark and the shark swims away, but they couldn't have done that on purpose that funny. It was really good.
Well, then there's the scene later with Tackleberry where like he's obsessing about all the new guns at the police show.
Right.
And there's the cartoon animated fly. And that's not the only time that they do animated
stuff. Oh, yeah, they like draw on the fucking film. Like.
Yeah, it's like this horrible cartoon fly, and then when they actually show it landed, it's not even a real fly. It's like some kind of terrible, it looks like pipe cleaners. Really? You couldn't kill a real fly and just like pin it to something?
Do you know how much a union fly wrangler costs? This whole franchise looks shit.
Well, you know, this sums up the movie. You remember the scene where they're just all in the elevator, and then all of a sudden someone rips a fart?
Oh my god.
That's
stinky elevator.
The joke. And then they all pile out like, oh, somebody farted. And then one person raises their hand like, it was me. Like, that was the joke.
So this movie sucks. God! Basically, notes, Pat, any notes?
No,
we are running out of steam like this movie franchise is.
Yeah, there was something sort of life-sucking about watching the movies. And then just going over them again now, like,
I think Miami in hindsight was the most insulting because it felt like a vacation for all of the characters, yet for us it was like the doldrums. It was the absolute doldrums.
They spent like 10 minutes for a scene on the airplane.
Yeah.
A whole sequence on the airplane went on too long.
The fat black guy like gets on the left side of the plane and the plane's like tilt, yeah. But like it doesn't reset itself. Like, yeah.
Because that's the way it works in the air.
Yeah, exactly. You don't turn left if the plane's banking left. Like, it just keeps going on course. Like,
or
what the fuck
would,
were they thinking?
If that was enough weight to spin it, wouldn't it just spin out of control and keep going that way?
It was bullshit, man.
Like, this movie really relied on the characters you love getting to enjoy themselves in Miami. And it was like, no, we fucking hate these characters. I hope they all die. I don't want
to
watch them.
Callahan was starting to show her age, which is, crazy to me because she was, smoking hot, like only 4 years prior. But she was already aging.
It looked
so much.
She had swapped her tits out for some upgrades.
No, I mean we're not being sexist in saying it. That's what I think. What's interesting about the choice to keep Callahan around for all of those movies, I actually thought was pretty awesome. Because any other major studio franchise is going to say you're starting to show your age.
That's
give us a hotter lady. And, like, the fact that they stuck with her, I think that's, like, actually kind of awesome.
Yeah, I don't know. I get the impression that they really – I don't think it was – I mean, as much as we're complimenting on them, like, wow, what a good choice to, you know, keep, like, this woman who's aging in the part. Honestly, I don't think the decision had anything to do with being, like, nice or that's a good thought. It's all, like, who can we get back? Like, who's willing to put up with this bullshit for another movie? Like, I don't –
But
I
for
feel
a
like-
character that literally all you care about is, like – how nice her tits look. It's weird to me that they would just, it would be so important to them to get back an aging middle-aged actress for that part.
Like, I think they didn't even think it through that far. Like, I think it's literally just like who will say yes.
Yeah. I'm just saying,
because the cast dwindles every movie.
No, definitely.
It was a marketing thing. Like, this movie felt like exactly who can we get back? Who do the people like? How little can we change and go about this and all cash a check at the end of the day.
Yeah.
So I guess, maybe Callahan, like the actress, like Easterbrook or whatever her name is, Leslie Easterbrook, just had nothing else going on and she just wanted to keep it going.
I can believe that.
I mean, yes, her only purpose and her only comedy is in Look at My Big Tits.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's just a decision of like how many people are willing to come back and let's keep her
familiarity.
And if she's willing to do it and she's one of the mainstay characters, like come on.
Come on back.
Yeah,
maybe you're right.
All right, so the next movie, Police Academy 6, City Under Siege.
This is the murder mystery.
Yeah, that's the thing.
Oh, my God.
What's amazing about the movie is, as fucking horrible as it was, the one thing that had our attention is they have the gall to have a mystery about who the master in charge. There's like a mysterious guy behind a screen that's a silhouette calling all the shots and leaking information to bad guys
through a vocoder.
Yeah. Entertainment we had, it actually kind of woke us up a bit, is because we got to basically place bets on like who's it gonna be. It was like a Scooby-Doo, really.
So who was right about who it was gonna be, John?
Obviously it was me, because
your Perry Mason episodes, John.
Well, what's hilarious, at the time I was talking all this shit about, oh man, I watch so many mysteries, I can call them all, like, oh man, I always see it coming. And yes, I called this one, but when the actual reveal came, like, I wasn't even excited because it was so
I made
bad.
A very good case for it being another character. And what I realized eventually throughout the movie was that they had made it in such a way as to make it so obviously the little old lady being the villain, because
it sounded like
I'm positive she probably voiced that she used it. They use her voice.
Yeah, they had to.
Well, and what's weird about that character is that she was in the Citizens on Patrol movie as a completely different character.
Yeah, and then she shows up for like 2 seconds at the beginning of this movie, which is a classic code for like, oh, the person was there, you recognize them, they're gone, they did it, they always did it.
Red herring.
Yeah, and it spoiler alert, I don't fucking know who did it, but it wasn't her.
The mayor.
Oh, no.
Well, because
the mayor
played by Kenneth Mars.
Yes. Well, because I just did logic. Like, the whole thing was like they were giving away secrets. So then to me, it was like, well, it has to be someone who knows anything. And the only character that has no point being in this movie is the mayor.
You used logic on the police account.
I know.
Well, and the whole plot ended up being the same plot as, like, Roger Rabbit.
Yeah.
Like, he's trying to devalue the land to buy it so they can build, like, a new train system.
But the reason I wasn't even excited was because when he actually got caught, and then they did the stupid like Scooby-Doo thing where he had a fucking mask on and for 2 seconds they made you think it was one guy and then he rips off the mask like, hey, it's me, the mayor. But he wasn't even like, oh shit, you caught me, like, fuck, I'm had. He literally like stands there and just goes, yeah, it was me, and like does a fucking dance and is like a jackass, like, oh,
like borderline retarded behavior.
He reveals himself to be so completely crazy. He revels in being caught.
And then the greatest moment of all, when Jones is losing the karate match, he gets kicked into a bunch of like metal parts. So he tucks them into his clothes.
Oh,
and then pretends to be a robot. And the
and
guy
it works.
Is like, you're a robot?
Like, he thinks he's a Terminator or something.
The robot was amazing. Like, his motions and everything like that were...
But what I don't understand is if you're in combat with that robot and you've clearly damaged the robot...
I love that you just said that. You're in combat with that robot.
But he had fake wires sticking out. He's clearly malfunctioning.
Why didn't he finish the job?
Like, why wouldn't the guy be like, oh, man, I was doing great when you were at, like, full robot strength? Like, why once away?
It's post-Terminator vocabulary. Yeah. So when you see the Terminator in all of his flesh, you're not as scared as when you see him when the metal shows.
When I see
it's psychological warfare.
But yeah, he goes, oh, you fuck, dude, you're a robot. No! And like, terrible.
Of all the sequels, I have to say that this one actually is my favorite because, like you said, John, this one has the gall to actually be a mystery.
Right.
And the
at least
fact,
it was something.
Exactly. The fact that it's so steeped into being a mystery that the bad guy is so damn cartoonish, it's got to be my favorite, on par with number one.
The director was named, what was it?
Peter Boners?
Peter Boners.
Fuck yeah, Peter Boners.
Funniest thing about the entire
I love Peter Boners.
Peter Boners.
I knew of him because I've been watching all of ALF, the TV series ALF.
Oh, right, and you said he directed
and
that.
He's like one of the main directors of ALF. And he did other stuff, I think, like Roseanne. He's like actually a really legitimate
comedy
director.
So they were going to make the movie, and they're like, man, we need to get Boners on
this.
Yeah,
get
like,
the Boners in. He'll
we
fucking
need to
fix
Boners
it.
This all.
We are less funny than this movie is now.
Okay. So guys, we made it. The final movie, Police Academy: Mission to Moscow,
starring Ron Perlman.
Yes,
yeah. And Christopher Lee.
I know. I was so sad when I saw Christopher Lee. Like, it's so weird because obviously he used to do a bunch of shit. But ever since Lord of the Rings, I have this memory of him as like, oh man, Christopher Lee. That's just
like yeah, me and you. Bread and butter. He is Sauron and that guy from Scream of Fear.
And Dracula.
Yeah.
Like, those, like, he has, totally. Like, such amazing roles. Yeah. But he did, like, 30 years of bullshit.
Well, you're right, like, Dracula. Like, all the Hammer horror stuff, even though those are cheesy, they're all really fucking good. I mean, it's him and, like, Peter Cushing.
Yeah,
and, like,
yeah.
To me, they make the huge mistake in the movie of, like, I like Ron Perlman, but if you're going to cast Christopher Lee, like, make him the bad guy, right? Like, why? Because he's just a police officer. And so, yeah, they go to Moscow. They go to the Soviet Union. And he's just there to greet. I didn't really understand why they're just there to help out, like
help train like new recruits as from.
But I thought it had to do with the game. Like, there's a video game and a crime lord that's like trying to get into a computer system.
Well, no, the training of the new recruits I thought was sort of like the cover. And like, right? And then like they were actually there to investigate this like this game.
So what, like the fucking CIA sent them to like Russia? Like why were they there? Like,
well, because I think Christopher Lee's character was their Lasard.
Right.
Like he was their commandant of the school. Somehow in between whatever what time span this is supposed to be, Harris, who has been like the reoccurring kind of villain of the school, has one, become a surveillance expert. And two, and is now a good guy. Like, yeah. He's still kind of a jerk, but he is actually genuinely 100% with the team and trying to help. But it just seemed weird that he was on their side because all this bad stuff kept happening to him. Like, he got blown up and food got dumped on him. A dog pisses on his eye through a periscope.
Oh, right.
Oh, my God.
But
so awful.
There's no reason for it to happen to him anymore. He's a good guy.
Well, there was never a reason for any of it to really happen. It's just sort of like there for it. Oh, God. Remember at one point, one of the Russian guys or somebody says, like, we're going to kick mini Butskis.
Yeah.
I don't remember that, actually.
Kick mini Butskis.
That was Lasard.
Right. Because he's trying to talk, to the Russian guy.
Many Butskis.
Nice. Many Butskis.
How about the fact that Lasard spends the entire movie in one room with a Russian family?
Which is actually pretty good.
Well, like, until you remember the part where they're serving like hard-boiled eggs, and then him and then the other guy literally spend like 5 minutes spitting eggs back and forth between each other's mouths.
Terrible. And it was like for no reason. It was like weird. It was reversed. It kept being like reversed. Whoop, like, go back.
That must have, like, done gangbusters in a preview, and they're like, let's fucking extend it, like, just more fucking egg spitting. Like,
this movie was so bad. So, the premise is that an evil villain who has created a Tetris-type game starring a Russian bear that's never really explained, that's sweeping the world, he's going to implant a virus code in it that is then going to...
It's like a Trojan horse.
It's going to infect the entire world. Stuff. Never addressing the fact that if it's the world's most popular video game, he should be a billionaire anyway. Yet he's still hell-bent on using his super popular video game.
Oh, and then people play the game on their Game Boys, but like at the beginning, there's no cartridge in the Game Boy.
One of the
it looks so
stupid. The movie
stupid.
Opens up with like a fake news report on this video game that's sweeping the nation, and they cut to a reporter who is too busy playing the game to report, and there's no fucking game in the Game Boy, and it is just mind-blowing. Oh, God.
We've hit the lowest of the low. Yeah.
What about how it seems like every scene takes place in the exact same building?
Oh yeah, the whole movie.
And I don't mean totally. And I don't mean like, you know, for your viewers, I don't mean that they're in the same like room and settings. It's like one person is in supposed to be one building somewhere across town, and then another person is in the basement of a different building, and then another person's even in a third room, but when they dump the food down the drain, it comes out in the drain of the evil villain's fortress.
Yeah, apparently the family that Lasard has been like basically adopted into, their house, all of their plumbing is in the like the Russian consulate. Like,
it's like police headquarters, the family room, and the villain's like hotel room
and lair.
All literally the same building.
Yeah, all of Russia is in one building. Apparently,
that's so fucking lazy.
Yeah, I mean that's the that is the epitome of this entire series. It's like take a concept, write it as lazy as possible, and don't explain it.
Yeah,
like that's like. That's a perfect example.
Because this one was easily the worst one. That was the sad thing about this marathon is every movie I felt like it got worse. Mm-hmm. And because we were talking about how we hate the first movie, we think it's really bad. I mean, and then it's like, it looks amazing compared to the later movies.
And then
they get worse and worse.
And then Bobcat Goldthwait shows up and those movies are terrible, but he's funny. And then all of a sudden he's gone.
Yeah.
And so all of a sudden now you're left with nothing.
So 5 and 6 are just fucking rough.
Like, yeah. But,
and 7.
And Ron Perlman was fucking phoning it in hard. Like, he was like, yeah, I'm gonna half do a Russian accent and read my lines.
He was like, I'm gonna cash a lot of check skis.
Yeah.
Like, exactly.
I gotta go get my giant lion man makeup.
Yeah. One last thing about Mission to Moscow. Remember the credits where they're riding on horses?
God. Yes.
They're doing traditional Russian horse riding where they do these like acrobatic jumps and spins, and it is some heinous stunt work. Cut like with such leisure, just like don't do a wide shot or a long shot, just close up on the stuntman's face, and then like cut like really awkwardly to any of the characters, regardless of race, age, gender. Like, who cares? Just cut to one of them smiling and like.
They're all standing pyramid style on top of the horses.
Yeah, yeah.
Commandant Lasard is riding right on top with his hands right up in the air. They're all so triumphant over this incredibly bizarre adventure.
And keep in mind, this is not a reference to another point in the movie. There was no Russian acrobatic horse riding ever.
Well, there were acrobats.
Yeah, so. There was that weird trio of like painters who talked just by going,
Making like derpy noises.
Around. And there was the new kid that we didn't discuss at all getting flipped onto the top of a chair at the circus.
Oh, we should talk about what's her name in this movie.
Callahan.
Claire Fulani's in the movie.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Just so you know.
Doing nothing. She just happens to be there.
Yeah, she's the love interest for the new kid who has vertigo when he's at heights. But it never comes into play in the plot.
Yeah, so Claire Forlani's in it. She does a Russian accent. It blows. She blows. The whole movie blows. All Police Academy blows. Don't watch it. The end.
Only three actors were in all seven of the movies as well.
Yeah, Callahan.
Not Callahan. She was out for that random movie.
Let's sum it up. Who were the three characters that were in
it? Sound effects guy.
Michael Winslow as Jones.
Tackleberry.
And Commandant Lasard.
The only three characters that survived and maintained all seven.
Hightower was not in the final movie, or else he would have been.
But if you want a little bummer, I was on IMDb. Tackleberry died.
Yeah. Oh, shit.
In 2001.
Of a heart attack at like 51 or 52.
Oh, man.
So was he actually 28 in 1980, whatever?
He may actually have been. But yeah, he died.
This shit just got real.
Here's a moment of podcast silence for Dick Balls. Thank you. That's just an appropriate send off.
By the way, I'm writing the new Police Academy movies. What do you think of my joke?
And just so you know, we're not the only ones that think that the series starts off okay, but then gets total shit. The first movie made like $100-something million and actually was the top money making movie in Germany the year it came out.
Stop it.
No, I swear to God. And then Mission to Moscow ended up with a total like ticket, like bring in like total, I'm not kidding, $116,000. Like, holy shit. That is horrifying.
Yeah.
Of all the marathons I've done, which, John, I've known you for over half my life.
Yes.
Like, since like seventh grade, we've done nothing but movie marathons and watch TV together and stuff. This by far was the most miserable I've ever been. And we've done...
I'd say it's one of the hardest ones.
It's the hardest one I've ever experienced. And we've done Bondathon 25 movies in a row. That was fun. Felt like a breeze.
That was a joy.
Seven Police Academy movies nearly broke me.
By the seventh, we were watching the clock. Like, we all are in this now. Like, how many seconds?
Have you ever had that experience other than Police Academy?
I don't think so. There's always, you can always latch on to something, but this one is just, even before we did the marathon, this was my worry about the movies. And basically what I said was like, bad comedies suck. They're so bad. Because if it's not a comedy, but it's bad, you can laugh at how, like, the poor attempt at the drama, and it's actually funny.
Yeah.
But a bad comedy isn't funny because it, like, it's just horrible.
Yeah.
Horrible to watch.
I mean, I'd say I've probably done anywhere between 20 and 30 movie marathons of, like, major franchises, and anywhere from, like, three movies up to 25 and seven Police Academies almost knocked me out. I, again, apologize to all of you for...
No need. I thoroughly enjoyed the experience.
I don't regret it. I never regret doing a marathon because, actually, one of the things...
I regret it.
You regret it?
Yeah, I kind of do.
Do you really?
We could have watched so many other movies
but
instead.
But, guys, I mean, we've done so many marathons. To be honest, like I said before, I've done maybe 20 or 30. This is the first real clunker, and that's a pretty good, like, doing a marathon like Police Academy that's so painful and just so bad, it actually helps elevate other marathons. Like, because you look back to Police Academy and say, oh, shit, that was rough. Nothing's as bad as that. And you sort of bond.
That's actually a good point.
And, like, when I'm in a marathon that I'm kind of bored with or stuff and you survive it, like, you kind of get this, like, brotherhood feeling.
We band of brothers.
Yeah,
here.
Like, we survived the shit.
When That's I true. Left this marathon, I went to a friend's house and she told me how she has spent her last several Sundays doing voluntary hospice care. And I was like, wow, so I really am a piece of shit. I just spent my day watching Police Academy while you sat with someone on their deathbed. Thank you for ruining my whole life.
Well, did you cry, Alexia?
I did. I did. I cried for myself.
Police Academy is kind of like caring for an old guy.
it's time for those films to let go.
Yeah, you keep looking at your clock. You're sitting with them like, well, okay, it's still going.
You have the same sense of loss, I think, at the end of it.
I regret nothing. This shed a whole new light on my own childhood because the middle three or so episodes of this film series, my father and my brother and I watched so often that parts of it had become running gags in our own family for a good 5 or 6 years. And looking back on it now, it hardly made me laugh at all. So I know that there has been some emotional growth for myself.
Right.
But the idea that, like, some of us had never seen them and that we, like,
That's
went
true.
Through it and survived it, I don't regret it. I think it's just
Yeah, I guess you're
part
right.
of the marathon.
I guess regret's not the right word. Because, yeah, you're right. Like, I would never say I regret watching a marathon.
Yeah.
Any marathon, really. It's more like I had hopes that it would be more fun, and I think it just had a lot of disappointment.
Yeah.
That's
more
what
I would agree with the disappointment factor.
Because it sucked. Like,
just so everyone's clear, this is Alexia. I still regret it. Every moment of it.
Well, before we sign off, got any ideas for the next marathon? We talked about the beach party movies. I think I'm going to keep that one in my back pocket.
Yeah, I think that might be something we
maybe not
you and me will do down the line.
I'm still pretty hardcore about the Alien Predator universe.
That's true. That'd be a pretty good
one. I would love that. I need some action, people.
Well, I do, Richard, I do like the idea of Alien and Predator universe. I do think after a 7-movie marathon. For the next one, I don't know what it's going to be, but I'm thinking we might do like a shorter one. Because if we watch all of the Alien movies and all of the Predator movies and all of the Alien versus Predator movies, that's going to be a lot of movies. So I want to build up my stamina. I say I will give high preferential treatment to you viewers that may have an idea for a marathon. Not that I'm trying to bribe anybody.
You can contact us via our website, cinemarathonpodcast.com, which will be up when you listen to this.
What's that website again?
It's cinemarathonpodcast.com.
And you can also get us at cinemarathon@gmail.com. All right, guys. Well, thank you, everyone. And
thank you.
You're looking now. You're both looking.
All right, we'll see you next time, guys. Have a good one.
Adios.
Adios.
Later. Thank you.